welcome back to the Hydrogen Bar and welcome back to your favorite podcast about hydrogen and fuel cells. I once again want to welcome my friend Johannes. Hello, Johannes.
Hello, Martin.
And we have started talking with our friend and guest David Hart last week, and we now are looking very much forward to continuing our discussions with him. So welcome, David. Thank you that you have found the time once again in this week for coming on the podcast.
Well, thank you, Martin. Thank you, Johannes. It was a pleasure to talk to you last week, and I'm looking forward to our discussions this time around.
Nice.
Yeah. So last time we spoke about the fuel cell industry review that you release every year and about the latest version, and we ended up by talking about the impact of the vehicle space on the scale up. And maybe if we continue at this point about the impact of the vehicles, what was striking to me was in this fuel cell industry review, the report about these cars that are there on the market. I mean, there are not many. Basically, it's the one Hyundai and one Toyota, the Nexo and the Mirai. But when I read about the statistics about the Mirai, it is pretty impressive that, as it is written there, they reduced the fuel cell by 20%, made it half the weight, and increased the power. So there seem to be some significant developments ongoing. Would you confirm this? How is your view on what's going on there in the vehicle industry?
Very much so. I think, you know, despite all of the enormous efforts that have gone in over the previous decades, it's really with field experience, let's call it that, that you get the right feedback to understand how best to improve a product and a technology. And so Toyota and Hyundai and others are all benefiting from having vehicles on the road, understanding how they're used, where things go wrong, how they can be made better, but also the supply chain. You know, there's a lot of work going on within the suppliers to say, well, we can make this smaller, we don't need as much of this material. There's a lot of academic work going on and research work generally. So there's a long way to go in improving fuel cells. They've done incredibly well. And I think that, you know, the figures that you point out there and the improvements in the Toyota stack are already very impressive. And if you look at the original fuel cells, they took up the entire van, whereas now it fits easily into the space of the internal combustion engine. It's getting more and more powerful. So the trajectory is fantastic. And I think cost will come, durability will increase. And that's important because a car needs maybe 5,000 hours of durability. That's a kind of rule of thumb. For a typical driver, that'll give you maybe 150,000 kilometers of range. People are talking about heavy-duty trucks. That means 50,000 hours of life. It's a different duty cycle, which means that it may be possible to do that with some similar technologies, but it's still a step change, and we need to make sure we keep learning, we keep implementing better and better systems in order to take advantage of what we've learned.
Now, you're saying that the future for passenger vehicles powered by hydrogen is also bright, but that is not really reflected in the current situation, right? So you're writing that, of course, the number of shipped Nexos has increased, but the number of shipped Mirais has significantly decreased. And in fact, as Johannes was just mentioning, there are no real additional volume models from other manufacturers in sight. So if the future is so bright as you've just described, what is the problem right now? Why are not more manufacturers and car makers able to get hydrogen passenger cars or sedan cars on the road?
It's a complicated question to answer. So I'll come at it in several chunks, I think. Mm-hmm. So I think the future of fuel cells in transport is bright. I think it's clear that battery electric vehicles have got a really strong position and they're not going to go away, and they will continue to occupy a lot of segments of the market. Where historically, and I think in the future, the sweet spot for fuel cells will be is in slightly bigger, slightly longer range vehicles, because as you increase the size of a vehicle and the range, you need to increase the battery size as well. That increases the weight, it increases charge time. There are all sorts of things that go along with that. And of course, there's massive technology improvement, so those things are going to get better. But there's still a point at which it just becomes maybe sensible to think about alternatives to batteries. What's happened up until now is that essentially fuel cells have taken a little longer to develop than people anticipated. So there was a lot of enthusiasm around the early 2000s, and they were definitely seen as the solution to the pollution problem of automotive. And it turned out we didn't understand the technology as well as we thought, and there were lots of complexities hidden in exactly those field trials that I was talking about earlier. So you need very deep pockets to do this. If you're looking at what Toyota or Hyundai or similar companies have spent on this, it's in the multiple billions of dollars, you know, probably five more than that. And doing that while you're also maybe developing a battery electric version and hybrids and all sorts of other things is very, very tough. So a lot of companies ended up saying, look, we can't do all of this, and batteries are a bit closer, and we need to meet some CO2 targets very soon. So we're going to roll out batteries as fast as we can, which was a very sensible thing to do and is paying off. So that's great. But I think there is nevertheless, you know, quite a long way to go. And I come back to my coexistence point, which is, it becomes harder and harder to see how you can do everything electrically. Mm. And the heavier and the longer distance and the storage, and if you think about how the energy system as a whole has to fit together and where the efficiencies come, you start to think about things which are not only battery and not only electric, also have some chemical fuel, for example, hydrogen. So it's a complex picture. It's an evolving picture. The car companies, a lot of them are under a lot of stress. You know, they had terrible sales last year, so they've been suffering from a lack of revenue. There's a lot of pressure on the car industry generally because of changes in motorization, younger people not necessarily wanting driving licenses or going out and buying cars, and a lot of pressure on zero emissions. So it's not easy for car companies to release new models or new technologies. That said, I think it's worth pointing out, as we did in the review, that China sees this as an important area, and China is promoting fuel cell cars as it has promoted battery cars. Mm-hmm. And so I think we'll see a lot of interesting things over the next two or three years, which will also have knock-on effects in the global supply chain. Costs will come down, new suppliers will come in, there will be more models available. You're right, there are very, very few at the moment, but there will be models in China, in other places. So I think it's going to get interesting. I don't see battery vehicles going away by any means, and I think they will dominate numbers for some time to come. But I don't think the race is over, and I don't think there's a single winner.
Mm-hmm. Do you think then that the other kind of large OEMs who are today saying they go basically all in on electric vehicles will also join this bandwagon of fuel, like producing then a couple of fuel cell vehicles and have them in their portfolio as well? Or might it be rather end up that there are then these OEMs who produce electric vehicles, and then there are others who focus on fuel cell vehicles? Is there some trend inside, like apart from Toyota and Hyundai, of course, who do both?
I think it may separate. I think there are definitely companies who are not big enough to do both, at least not until they become essentially commodities and they can buy a lot of it from a tier one supplier or from another company within the industry. I think we do see signs that companies are coming back. So Honda has always been there. I mean, they've unfortunately not been able to sell as many vehicles as Toyota and Hyundai, but they have fantastic technology and they have fantastic capability, and they have a partnership with GM, which is still going strong. And GM has sort of refocused a bit ever since the financial downturn and its bankruptcy problems to fuel cell vehicles that were perhaps heavier duty or with a military focus or with other areas, but they still have a very significant program. And you see, you know, PSA re-entering. They've been quiet for a very long time, mm-hmm. but they now have light duty vehicles. BMW has made some announcements. Mm-hmm. There are alliances within the industry. So I think we will definitely see more companies. I don't think it will be all of them for any time soon. The other thing that's worth just pointing out is the tier one suppliers, so the companies like Bosch and Denso and you know, others who most people don't really think about very often. They're not necessarily all household names. A lot of them have really strong fuel cell capability or tie-ups, and they see that as part of their future. And I think it would be wise to imagine that they've thought about it quite hard because it's existential for them. And so I think that points towards the fact that we will see more vehicles, more types of vehicles, probably at the slightly heavier end, SUV and up, but not exclusively.
For me, it's also very exciting to see that there is also a lot of new players entering the hydrogen vehicle market. So you have companies from the United Kingdom with River Simple. You have, I think it's called H2X, which is from Australia. And you have a couple of others. And of course, from our daily life or from our day-to-day experience, we almost never see new car manufacturers entering the market. What is your feeling? Do these small and new players really have a chance against the big players on the market? So against all of the Toyotas and Hyundais and PSAs and GMs and what have you. Is there a chance for those small and new players?
I think there definitely is. And I think for two reasons. One is that, to be honest, the large players are likely to welcome anybody who wants to join the market because it reinforces the value proposition. It means there will be more hydrogen fueling stations and the economics will get better. And this is not a zero-sum game. If there are more options within fuel cells, then more people are likely to get engaged. So I think that's very positive. The other thing is that very often these new players don't have the kind of structure that the incumbents do. So in the same way that Tesla didn't have to use conventional dealerships and, you know, decided to do things completely differently from the conventional car industry, mm-hmm. new entrants can do that. And River Simple is a fantastic example. River Simple will not sell you a car. Mm-hmm. They will lease you a mobility solution. And that's fantastic. They're thinking, you know, circular economy. They're thinking of taking the car back. How can they recycle it at the end? Can they reuse it? Your lease package would include fuel. So it's a totally different service model, which suits a startup because they can build their entire business around that, but is only now coming to the conventional car companies as something to say, oh my goodness, this is a threat. What can we do? So I think there's plenty of space for innovation. They're not all going to succeed by any means, but I think it's great just to see the diversity, the new concepts, the, you know, and some of them are pretty sexy. You know, there's some really nice designs out there as well, which is great.
Yeah.
Now, maybe to go to the less sexy parts. in the report, you mentioned, of course, also the buses and also the trucks, and especially that these buses are at the moment seeing an extreme increase in demand, and that they might really be the kind of driving force in the next couple of years. Can you elaborate on the market there as well a little bit?
Yeah, and I think it's really been a very strong signal over the last year is heavy duty has to decarbonize. Air quality is also a problem, particularly in cities. How can we do that? Batteries are probably not the easiest way. And so fuel cells are an obvious option. And we've seen most, if not all, of the heavy duty providers really start to engage. So an interesting example is Daimler, who more or less walked away from the passenger car side of fuel cells, despite having had a great fuel cell. You know, the technology was great. They've spent a very long time and an enormous amount of money developing it. Yeah. They said, okay, no, we're going to focus on battery vehicles and we're going to put the fuel cells into heavy duty because we think that's where it makes sense. Yeah. And you see that in others. And the buses, I think, is very exciting. It's taken a long time to sort of seed that. The fuel cell and hydrogen joint undertaking in Europe has been very influential and very supportive of buses for many years. And now it's got to the point where you see whole fleets of buses being rolled out. And that's incredibly important for infrastructure, for visibility. People get on a bus and realize that you can get on a fuel cell bus and it's normal. And it will help the supply chain. And I think the interesting thing, which we did mention in the review, is that in one place, in Nanjing, in China, they have a battery bus fleet and they've announced they're going to replace it with fuel cell buses. And I'm fascinated by that. So it may be about ease of refueling, it may be about range, it may be about local environmental conditions. I haven't had time to investigate, but it's an interesting signal, I think.
What I find very interesting is also the fact that the fuel cell itself is not in question anymore, or not really in question. There are some applications, of course, where a hydrogen combustion engine is discussed once again. But I think the lion's share of applications is sure that the solution will be the fuel cell. And I think the main area of battle, if you will, is about the storage technology. And we are looking into 350 bars, we are looking into 700 bars, and we are looking into liquid hydrogen. And especially when we were talking about trucks and buses, I think this race is very open. What is your feeling? Is there one storage technology that will win in the end? Or will this also be something like a coexistence of different storage technologies?
I think for some time to come, it's inevitable that it'll be a coexistence because that's what we have now. And we've seen a lot of effort and money go into developing those solutions. I think that for heavy vehicles, it may make sense to move to liquid at some point because there is a significant benefit in terms of both, you know, weight and storage on board storage capacity. That will take time because the standards are not fully developed, particularly for heavy duty, and there isn't very much infrastructure. There are very few liquefaction plants in Europe, for example. But I think gaseous will continue to be convenient and cost-effective for most vehicles. And once you've gone through the pain of investing in both 350 and 700 bar, for example, and there's also consideration of around 500 bar in China. So that's yet another discussion. Once you've gone through the pain of making that first investment, you can actually start to understand how you can do both at one place if you have an extra compressor bank, or you can store everything at high pressure and then fill some vehicles at 700 and some at 350. You can make that work. It's not perfect, but it works. So I think a lot of this, if we look at where we are now, we're very positive about the growth, and I think it's a great story and it's significant. We have to remember that the industry is still in its infancy, And assuming that growth continues and that the positive aspect continues and that there are more markets in more places, this is just a tiny, tiny amount of the fuel cells that will be out there and will require fueling. And there will be different solutions, much in the way that we have diesel and gasoline coexisting today, and CNG in some places, and LPG in some places, and you know, ethanol and goodness knows what else. So I think there's plenty of space for that.
Mm-hmm. Now, the topic of internationalization or international markets, I was wondering there about these hydrogen strategies we have in here in Europe. We got to know about all kinds of different strategies that the European countries have. China released now the new 14 years plan. You mentioned already the Korean strategy that is pretty aggressive. How do you see the global set or the landscape of these strategies? Is there an competition? Do you have the feeling that there are some countries just like going ahead where other countries are a little bit too cautious?
Well, I don't know about competition. There's definitely positioning. I think it's too early for competition because a lot of these are strategies and plans and aspirations rather than concrete developments. And it will take a while for all of that to materialize, and then we'll get a much better picture of what's real and who's moving fastest. Again, though, I think there's space for everybody. And I think if you look at the global energy system and you look at what's required, as much hydrogen as we can make and as much renewable electricity as we can use directly and as many applications as we can switch to batteries and fuel cells and hydrogen, the faster, the better. And so I'm very encouraged by not only the fact that a lot of countries have developed strategies and some of them are very detailed and thoughtful, but there is also funding for many of them. There are regulations being passed. Korea does stand out because it has quite an all-encompassing program, which is looking at the supply side, looking at the demand side, supporting different applications, et cetera, et cetera. Mm. But, you know, Japan has been in this place for a long, long time and has a very deep understanding of what it takes to deliver hydrogen. And then we have new entrants, such as Australia and Chile and others who are looking at it. And Germany, of course, has had very long support and very large scale support and a lot of industrial buy-in. And I think all of it's needed. There will be a bit of friendly competition, but again, we're not yet at a point where you can actually compete. we're still in the build up to the race. We're still warming up. We're still getting the tires warm, going around the first lap behind the pace car, doing all of those things while we figure out who's actually well positioned to speed away.
I also want to have a look in the aerospace sector, or especially in the aviation sector. Recently, or a couple of weeks ago, there was this press release by Airbus, who have plans for quite a few plane models powered by hydrogen. What is your impression? Will hydrogen play a significant role in the aviation industry in the future as well? Because my personal feeling is that, especially for planes, it's still a very, very long way to go. What do you think?
I think for mass adoption, you're right, for a number of reasons. One is that long-haul, large aviation is difficult to do with hydrogen as much as it's difficult to do with anything else, because the energy density of kerosene is fantastic and the power to weight ratio of a turbine is fantastic as well.
And it's also heavily subsidized, which makes it makes it extremely cheap.
It is heavily subsidized. It's also subject to all sorts of interesting agreements, and it's for very good reason quite hard to change standards in aviation because you don't want anything going wrong. So that said, this is exactly one of those areas where I did my first analysis on hydrogen in aviation way back in the 90s, and it looked kind of interesting conceptually, and that was about it. And then everybody said, look, this is crazy. Why would you start with aviation? And we've seen in the last year or two that actually there are use cases that make sense. And you talk about Airbus, which has not only announced three potential models. I mean, they're not going to be for tomorrow, but they're definitely in the pipeline. Mm. But also, we have ZeroAvia, who's doing small-scale flights. We have Universal Hydrogen, which has a link with Plug Power, and they are looking at replacing sort of the mid-scale flights. And if you look at what they're suggesting is feasible, actually, it starts to make sense. And so, again, I would have been horribly wrong had I said this will never happen and everybody's crazy. Whereas in fact, they're crazy enough to want to try it and clever enough to make it work. So I think there is a role for hydrogen and for fuel cells in aviation. I think it will take a while to grow, but I think it's definitely there, and it's definitely going to be a really interesting area to watch in the next couple of years as we start to see those first campaigns being mounted and the first flights being made.
Now, as the time is getting tight already, maybe one more question from my side. You have seen now the last years, the whole development in this area. What are you excited now in the next couple of years? What are you already looking forward to put in the fuel cell industry review in the next years?
Well, to be honest, the exciting thing is always the surprise when I look back at the end of the year, all of the things we've gathered, and that's where it starts to take shape. You start to understand, you know, what the trends have been, and what's you collate everything. And you say, oh, actually, a lot of things happen in this area which I hadn't really noticed during the year, and let's talk about it. But I think, so we're seeing huge amount more investor interest in this. We're doing a lot of due diligence work on both startups and much larger corporate kind of activity, which is pointing towards consolidation of technology and improvements in technology. And so I think we're going to see ongoing announcements of a really interesting performance and interesting new approaches, and I hope continued good investor support, because that's what's needed to get them through to commercialization. I'm excited just about seeing more vehicles and more stationary fuel cells and more other applications out there, so you can point to them and say, look, there's something, it actually works. And I'm quite excited that we have just had installed, literally 2 kilometers from my house, the first hydrogen refueling station in this region of Switzerland. Unfortunately, I don't yet have a hydrogen vehicle. But, you know, if anybody listening would like to sponsor me, that's fine. You know, that's a really great sign, and that will be used by delivery trucks, and it will be people are already commenting on it and getting to know it. I'm just excited that this is going to become more widespread, and particularly that there will be these entrepreneurs who have interesting ideas that I had never thought of, and they will say, look, this works. You go, oh, that's clever. that's always good.
Well, then, thank you very much, David. It was very nice speaking with you today once again. Thank you very much for the insights that you provided to us and to our listeners and to our audience. All the best for the future. Keep up the excellent work. And we are really looking forward to reading the fuel cell industry review of 2021. I think it will come out sometime in the beginning of next year. Is that right? Around February?
Yes, it will be early in 2022. We will do our very best to make it earlier than this year. We were overwhelmed by client work, so we couldn't get it out as early as we wanted. But I would hope maybe even January, if we can do it. But as soon as 2021 is closed, we will be making sure we're writing and reviewing and proofreading and checking.
Good. And then I hope we can reach out to you again and talk about the new developments.
It would be a pleasure. And it's been a pleasure to be with you on this. So thank you very much for the invitation and for the chance to talk. It's been fun.
thank you very much for your time and sharing all your insights.
You're very welcome.
If you want to have a look at our websites, you can just visit hydrogenbar.net. You will also find a contact form there. I'm not repeating our email address because that's a German email address. So for our international audience, it will be much easier to use the contact form. So please go ahead and do that. Or you can get in contact with us. And if you should have any questions or remarks about the things that David just said, you can just write us and we'll forward the information to David. And yeah, we've reached the end of this episode. Thank you once again for listening, and we'll talk to you soon and hear you in the next episode. Thank you very much. Take care. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.